Good evening all. Yeah, just been having a nice evening stroll, listening to some tunes. And before I get into the meat of this one, like, if you fancy a little chuckle, look up on your Spotify, Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain by Willie Nelson. It's nothing to do with the song, like, the song's a beaut, but you know, on Spotify, some of the artists, they do like a little video that loops whilst the song's playing. As you can imagine, like, Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain isn't exactly like a club smasher sort of floor filler type song. It's nice, sort of peaceful, soothing to the soul type of song, right? And the video though, like, this little loop starts off really nice, a nice little farmhouse, smoke billowing out of the chimney, perhaps they're, you know, making a nice little stew inside. Green fields, horses, you know, it looks idyllic. But then in fades Willie, like, looking absolutely bastard, like, little hat on, braces, all stressed out, like, struggling on the back of this horse. Oh man, it reminds me of that bit in like, right at the end of Napoleon Dynamite. Like, yeah, I'm sorry I'm late. I just got done taming a wild stallion for you guys. Oh, Willie. Like, yeah, he's got his whip, like, held high, and he's got this look in his eye like he's going to fucking end someone. But yeah, this, like, manic look. Blue eyes crying in the rain. then back to tranquility. Then back to Willie. Then tranquility. Ah, oh, well, maybe it's not funny, but it just caught me off guard. But yeah, we've had an email, guys. And before I get into that though, let me start with a couple of notes that I wrote to myself earlier in the supermarket. A bit later at night now, it's like 11 o'clock at night, just sort of having a little stretch. And maybe these, I don't know, in the stark reality of night aren't going to be as funny as I thought earlier. But yeah, a bit of observational humour. Rightio, let's load these up. Oh yeah. Breaded ham. Surely it's going in bread anyway, so what's the fucking point? Are we supposed to eat it as if it's already a sort of self-breaded sandwich? Surely not. Maybe people do. Well, that's as far as I've got with that. Bloody hell. Pilgrim's Choice Cheese. Nice name. Fair enough. But why am I supposed to trust the cheese choice of a smelly old pilgrim? Oh, I've made a long religious journey. I've made sacrifices and had many a spiritual revelation. Anyway, get your laughing gear around that cheddar. You know, it's reap bow, I tell thee. Right good with some nice crusty breaded ham. Right, so there we go. Shan't be weak. Anyway, the email is from my mate JT, the patriarch of the Thompson children. That's ill. Oh, madness. Yeah, from JT, and no, I don't know what patriarch means. But yeah, it just felt right. Anyway, little Jimmy Thompson, all the way down in Sydney, Australia. And he writes, "Hi Jack." Aggressive start. Trying to take over. Oh my lord. It's like fucking Fast and the Furious. Really misjudged this. Anyway, long time listener, first time emailer. Love that. Everyone's picking up on that. Please keep that going. Anyway, having listened to the 6th episode about your Zambia adventure, I had one question. How have you managed to go through life with a 5th grade reading aloud ability? Many thanks, JT. P.S. I cherish you. I miss the way the sun glints from the flecks of ginge in your beard. Like 1,000 splendid suns. You're the most handsome man I've ever met, and I regret flying to Australia because I can no longer stare into your bedroom through the skylight every night. Please make an OnlyFans. Sent from my iPhone. Oh, bloody hell, Jay. iPhone, someone's earning. But yeah, you got a good point there, actually. Like, how have I made it this far through life with an inferior set of reading aloud skills? But I suppose charisma, mainly charisma. And I've also been told I've got nice teeth. That sort of opens a lot of doors. But yeah, anyway, speaking of reading aloud, I'm going to read another travel story, I think. So if all goes well, there won't be any breaks now. Yeah, and well, hopefully it stays quiet. But if you do hear a sudden change of quality, it's because the reading went so badly that I've aborted mission and gone home. So right, let me just get a nice little bit to lean on, and I'll open up the story. Like, this one does kind of follow on from the last one I read out, actually, from the airport in Zambia. So yeah, I'll try and read it aloud as competently as I can for you, Jay. But yeah, this one is on tibballstravels.com, same as the last one. So written about the same time, and it's called Zimbabwe, an unofficial visit. Okay, right, here we go. Zimbabwe, an unofficial visit. This is to document my time with one of the dodgiest men that I have ever met. It all started on a really clammy afternoon in a hostel in Livingstone, Zambia. I had been to watch the sunrise at Victoria Falls that morning, and was playing pool against a kid that was annoyingly good. To all watching, I was graciously letting him win every time. After about 20 minutes, I noticed a guy enter into the pool playing arena. Baggy shirt, jeans, and of course, some very shiny buckle-up loafers. All right, mate, I said, whilst rising from another missed easy pot. Nothing. I passed the cue to the kid and backed away from the table to make room. You from around here? Again, nothing, but I took that his silence was due to him being very clearly from around there, and not rudeness. But then, for no occasion, he expertly downed one of the awful soapy local beers and was filled with a sense of urgency. I have a car. Do you have money? He spoke out from the diaphragm in a deep voice. Such a question doesn't give you much time to think. Before I had any time to assess the situation, I caught myself saying, yeah, man, where are we going? On the way out to the car, he became a bit more chatty. My name is Say, he said, whilst cracking open a warm bottle of beer using another that he was carrying. You like talking then? I joked, and then to my surprise he actually smiled. It was at this point I was a little bit more confident that he wasn't going to murder me. He handed me the open beer and then used his teeth to open the second for himself. Woof. I got into the passenger side of the terribly parked Nissan, one of those lowered sports Nissan types. Said hello to a large lady that was sitting in the back seat, I assumed that this was his wife, and she had an amazing spherical afro and perfect white teeth, but didn't say much. Anyway, off we went. Over the next few hours, we just drove around taking in as much of the scenery and wildlife that we possibly could. It was great. We hadn't talked it through, but it became clear that he was going to take me around the town and get me local prices for all of the sites. In exchange, I would pay for everything, including the entries for him and his wife to everywhere that we went. This sounds like a bad deal, but it actually worked out really well. The tourist rates for everything are astronomical compared to what the locals pay. Explain that they call it Mzungu tax. Another hour passed. We dropped off his wife at one of the police checkpoints and then started to head back to the hostel. A little further along, it was the first punctuation point of the encounter. Do you remember those books that have breaks in the story and they give you options for the next stage of the adventure? Do I? Another little opportunity to plug the Adventure Boys podcast. Anyway, that's by the by. We were parked up at the hostel having yet another disgusting beverage, and I had hit one of those one of these decision moments. Either call it a day or go with Say and his wife for a night out. I opted for the second option. Anyway, later on in that evening, the sun had set quickly and the air was a lot more bearable. Say pulled up in the Nissan and there were neat dusty mud streaks along the side of the car and across the windows where he had tried to give it a quick clean. I opened the door and then said hello to a different beautiful woman that was sitting in the back seat. This one was probably his daughter. She had perfect straight black hair and was clad in more beads than the teen section of a jewellery catalogue. She didn't say much. We started heading away from town, and soon the Nissan's dim headlights illuminated some large green metal gates, in front of which were two skinny lads in beige, with machine guns and flip-flops. Picture the I'm the captain now guy from Captain Phillips. Say sounded the horn and one of the men walked over to the driver's side window. They spoke briefly, almost argumentatively, in the local language. Then after he handed the guy a fistful of my money, he turned to his chum and walked back to his position. They both set about removing the armour of locks and chains that adorned the gate and then slowly opened it. We drove past them, slowly, through the gates and on into the darkness. This was a safari park, it's not clear, but yeah, we drove into the darkness. No words, just the Nissan's crappy engine and a barrage of wildlife noises. It felt like entering through the King Kong gates of Skull Island or going into Jurassic Park. Say explained that he had convinced the guy that I was sick. I was his sick albino brother, and that we had been granted the special privilege of exploring the safari park as one of my final wishes. A crap story, but obviously the money had helped things along. We proceeded to drive around the park with only the headlights of the car and a couple of torches to help us see. The Nissan wasn't meant for this sort of terrain that we were covering. Usually to drive around in the safari parks, you go in sort of large open-topped jeeps and, you know, stuff like that. So it kept struggling on the track that was made primarily of loose little stones. We passed loads of zebras, elephants and antelope in the darkness. It was amazing and terrifying at the same time. And then the inevitable happened. We were stuck. I'm going to slash on this tree and then I'll push us out. Shine the torch this way, I said over my shoulder whilst pacing out into the darkness. I did my thing and then turned back to walk towards the rear of the car. And then turned back to walk towards the rear of the car. I could see inside that Say and the girl were laughing. Mzungus are crazy, he said, catching his breath. I was confused. He told me that I had gone right next to and potentially urinated on two crocodiles and that I was lucky that they hadn't attacked me. I didn't believe him and still don't, but I was never completely sure of anything that he said, so I took it as a life lesson. I wedged a stick under the back wheels for some traction, and luckily the car was unstuck pretty easily. We drove around a bit more, ate some meat and bread that the girl had in her bag, and then we went back. The whole night was insane. But we met again in the morning, very early. All Say had said to me was bring a spare pair of clothes because we were going to get wet. We picked up yet another lady, another girlfriend. I mean, it was clear at this point that all of these women had been sex workers, and I just hadn't realised. But and we picked her up at a small town and then made our way to the Zambezi. We got there after about an hour of driving, and there were no signs, gates or anything like that, just open river and a really sketchy looking boat. I hate boats at the best of times, but this one was ridiculous. It looked like a child's drawing of a raft, about 9 long planks lashed, screwed and nailed together in an ad hoc fashion around the middle plastic bit of the boat, and what looked like an old tennis racket sort of improvised for a paddle. Still, the water was very calm and it looked like you could see the bottom of the river, so I thought, why not? The boat worked, we paddled over pretty smoothly, and the river was so slow that we had barely drifted downstream. We went up the bank on the other side, and because the Zambezi actually acts as a border between Zambia and Zimbabwe, Say said we had technically gone into a new country. We were in Zimbabwe. He did a little dance, and then I started dancing as well. There's no music, but he was sort of euphoric and swearing a lot. It's a really weird moment. And after about 2 minutes, the mania stopped and we got back on the raft and drifted back over. On our way back to the car, he explained that we were very lucky. First, that there were no border controllers. Apparently they go up and down the river on speedboats with machine guns. And more importantly, that there were no hippos. He said that he knew a guy that was killed by a hippo, and they were the animals that scared him the most. As with most of the dodgy stuff that we did, the potential danger that we were in really settled in after we had done the thing. We had illegally entered Zimbabwe, avoided being shot at by police or killed by a hippo, and returned to the hostel all before breakfast. The next morning, we arranged to meet really early again, as Say was heading to Lusaka, and said I could come along. It was 4 in the morning. I stood at the roadside with all my stuff and waited for him. Say didn't arrive until nearly 5. He pulled up and formally got out of the Nissan, which at this point was shinier than a new penny, and put my bags in the boot. He was wearing a full suit and tie and the shiny loafers that were looking particularly buffed. I clocked that in the back of the car this time there wasn't a beautiful woman. This time there was a little old man that looked like a black version of Hans Moleman from The Simpsons. Like the girls though, he didn't say much. The vibe though was completely different. Silent, professional, no music. Say was drinking water. This is the first time I'd seen him drink anything other than beer or moonshine since meeting him. And about an hour into the journey, it became clear that the Nissan wasn't Say's. It was the old guy's, the guy in the back. And the old guy in the back was an air conditioning salesman who clearly makes very, very good money. Due to where he is. And he'd hired Say to drive him and sort of look after the car, whilst he's busy in town. And Say wasn't supposed to have been using the car for himself at all. I got dropped at the side of the road near to Lusaka so I could hitchhike the rest of the way. And I never heard from either of them again. Thus ending one of the strangest encounters that I have ever had. I only have one photograph with Say, taken by one of his girlfriends before the trip to Zimbabwe. I think the forced attempt at a smile pretty much sums up our brief but eventful relationship. Just think, he's probably still out there drink driving, soliciting sex workers and hustling mzungus and local businesses for every kwacha that he can possibly make. Thanks for the good time, say, you dodgy son of a gun. that's that. So I'm aware that you guys can't actually see that picture that I'm talking about, but I'm going to upload it to Instagram. My account, if you're not my chum already, is at Jack Tidball, JACKTIDBALL. If you'd like to have a butch, and if you want to support the show, there's a link down in the description. To get involved in the show, you can email me tidbitspod@protonmail.com. I've read aloud quite a few of them, but yeah, get involved, and thanks for listening.